Every one of us gets to create our own vision of what a relationship should look like and how to create that in our lives. Today, I'm going to be interviewing Yue Xu and Julie Kravchik, the hosts of the Incredible Dateable podcast, to learn their wisdom and insights in how we can do this. So stay tuned to this episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
Yue, Julie, I am so delighted to have you here. I enjoy our conversations so much. You have so much kind of sparkling, human, caring, thoughtful insight about the whole world of dating. And you're just some of the smartest and funniest and most insightful people I know in this arena. So I'm just honored, and I just feel like we're all in my living room together, but having a really large audience who get to hear all that you have to say. So I'm just thrilled to have you here. And this is a special time because you've done so much work. Your kind of empire is growing and growing. Your collaborations are growing. Your audience is growing, and you've worked with so many people. So your wisdom base is growing constantly at the same time, and you're always day by day questioning and exploring. So I am excited to have all of our listeners tap into your wisdom, your insights, your experiences, of which, you know, you're kind of up there in terms of people who have heard dating stories with consciousness and awareness and reflection. Like, in this world, you're really up there with, you know, the few people that have done this to this degree with such consciousness. So in this time, I'm going to get to hear from both of you. We're all going to get to hear from both of you about the insights, the hacks, the keys, the paradoxes, the things that you have found most important that you would like to share with the audience about this entire world of dating and finding love. Let's jump in. Either of you who wants to just start with one key insight that, like, for you just at this moment really stands out, and then we'll just take it from there.
Well, Ken, first of all, thank you so much for having us on your podcast. It's been such a pleasure getting to know you. And Julie and I always say, if we're ever having a bad day, we just channel Ken Page.
And yes, we do.
All of a sudden, our confidence meter is up. We are bright and happy people. Thank you for always providing a safe space for us to share our experiences. And I guess to answer your question, the one key insight or nugget of information is that we often look at dating as a destination. The destination is the relationship. But from our 7 years of doing this podcast and personal experience, dating is a constant evolving experience with no destination. It's one big social experiment. And once you land in a relationship, that opens up a whole other realm of experiences. So if we can look at dating as a constant evolution, constant change, then we won't be so outcome focused. We'll be more present in what we're learning in the moment. And along the same lines, I truly believe that there's no the one for you, for anybody. There's the one who's right for you right now, who's willing to do life with you. And that's the person you cherish, and you really want to focus and prioritize your energy on. But don't think of the entire lifetime of your dating experiences as searching for the one.
I'll be right back after this. If you're interested in accelerating and deepening your search for love, I want to invite you to a very special project, the Deeper Dating Intensive. I only offer it twice a year, and it's a 6-month journey working closely with me and an amazing community to transform each member's search for love. And you can learn more at deeperdatingintensive.com. And if it feels like a match, on that page, you can set up a free one-on-one session with me to explore possibilities. I look forward to connecting if this speaks to you. Welcome back. So that's so interesting because in a way you're saying there is no one, no grand transcendent, just one. But the task in a way is to make the person you're with the one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's absolutely great. That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Yue. How about you, Julie? Any kind of first insight that comes to you?
What comes to mind for me is when Yue and I started this, we thought that when we started Dateable, we thought every story would be about, you know, two people dating, meeting each other, finding their person. As Yue said, that could change over time. And what we've realized is that dating is actually so much more about ourselves than the other people. We're always thinking about the people that ghosted us or the people that rejected us. But ultimately, it's really coming back to our own fear of abandonment or our own worthiness of a relationship. And that's why dating is so difficult. It's not, yes, it's hard to find someone that you mesh with. I don't want to undermine that. But what's really challenging is that we take it so personally, in that it really is a mirror of our own state. Because when you think about it, dating is the most personal thing in the world. You could equate it to a job interview. And sure, of course, if you don't get a job, it hits your self-esteem in some ways. But at the core of dating, you're asking someone to be with you, to love you. Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really true. So your very sense of self is at stake.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And would you say that as we shift and grow our sense of self, our dating experience shifts as well?
Oh, absolutely. I know for me personally, that was the key. Like, I think for years I was like, okay, do they like me? I need to get past that third date, you know, to prove my worthiness. And when you start to shift out of that mode into like, I'm freaking awesome, I'm a catch, someone would be so lucky to be with me. Of course, there's a lot of work that builds up to that. That's when dating really changes completely because you're not looking for someone to fill a void.
I think that's like an alchemy that we, getting to do the work that we do, get to see. Is this amazing thing is that when you make that personal change, your dating experience actually changes too. It's so true. And it's a really, really wonderful thing. Oh, I have 20 million questions.
Fire away.
I will, but I have one question I want to ask first. And if you're okay with this, could you each talk about where you are in your dating journey and kind of maybe the biggest learnings that have gotten you there?
Yeah, such a great question. And to answer that question, I think as our dating journey changes, I find for myself, my taste in people change as well.
Yes.
So when you come to another level of consciousness, when it comes to dating, you end up gravitating towards people who are in a similar realm. So where I am currently at is recently ended an almost 5-year relationship after discovering infidelity on his part. And this was the ultimate test, I think, of my resilience and my capability to love. And while it was absolutely detrimental and traumatic, when we're talking about this main character energy that Julie was just describing, that dating is about you, it's not about the other people doing stuff to you. I had a choice to really think about an experience like this, is this the beginning of my story or is the end of my story? Mm-hmm. If I were to create a movie out of this, this would be the beginning scene. This is the beginning scene that inspires greatness to come. And I think that is where I am right now, is really leaning into my main character energy and letting this really unfortunate opportunity inspire beautiful things.
Wow. Wow. You know, I remember reading this quote by a spiritual teacher I really respect. And he said, in the divine tribunal, betrayal of a loved one is the greatest sin of all.
Yeah. Wow.
And yeah, the betrayal of that. And I just want to acknowledge that, the devastation. But also, I love the concept of the beginning of what's next mm-hmm. for you and the kind of holding of that. As an EMDR therapist, EMDR is a technique working with trauma, but at the heart and soul of working with the trauma, the question is, how do you see yourself? That's how the EMDR therapist and the client see growth and progress, is the sense of self in relation to this traumatic event and how that shifts. And that defines health, healing, and growth. And to me, that's just kind of what you captured. And it opens up this whole arena of the pain that happens in dating and that can happen. And the hurt to self-esteem, the disappointment mm-hmm. and the handling of that. Such a huge, huge piece. For listeners who are coping with that kind of disappointment, that kind of hurt, like at this time, any thoughts you want to share, both of you?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, like we are clearly proponents of relationships. We do a podcast about dating and love and relationships. But the most important relationship you'll ever have is with yourself. Yeah. So the more that you can lean into that, whether you're single, whether you're in a relationship, it doesn't matter. We have a very popular term that our community loves, master dating, where you go out on a date by yourself. So we have people putting up pictures of them, you know, out at a winery or going to a movie themselves, whatever it may be. And we love that term because I really believe that regardless of your relationship status, the relationship with yourself is something to keep nurturing. And the more like at one we can have with that relationship, that's when you don't need a partner. You just want one.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Julie, how about you? Oh, Yue. Yes.
I was just going to say very quickly for anybody going through this, it's you'll get advice about moving forward and taking that next step and the time heals everything. Or you'll get advice of people saying, you know, really feel the pain and mm-hmm. go through all of the stages of grief. And from what I'm currently going through, I feel like being present is the best gift I can give myself. And I don't want to ruminate in what has happened. I can still feel those feelings. I also don't need to put pressure on myself to progress each day and distract myself and keep myself busy and no time heals all. I get that. I get the concept, but I think it to be very real with ourselves and to sit in the present moment of what you're feeling is probably the best gift you can give mm-hmm. yourself.
So in other words, kind of not feeling like you have to marinate in it because that's what healing looks like, and not feeling like you have to move on because that's what healing looks like, but being with your heart where you are right now.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such an essential act of self-honoring. That's beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
And it probably changes every day where you're at, and that's okay.
Every
hour, you know, it's okay.
Yes. So true. So true. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that, Yue. Thanks for sharing that with us. And Julie, would you share anything about your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'll play off that a little, but like when I, you know, I'm now two years into a relationship and we're moving in together. So taking that next step, wow. There's a lot of boxes everywhere right this minute as we speak. So, which has been really great. You know, I think like for the first time in my life, what I think separated this relationship from everything in the past is that I can be utterly myself. I can state my mm-hmm. needs. I know they're going to be listened to most of the times met, or if they're not met, there's a reason why it doesn't work for my partner and I need to hear that out. So this is the most healthy communication I've ever had in a relationship.
Yay.
Thank you. And this is from someone that did not always have it, which is why it's a win for me, because for years, I was either in situationships or just, you know, endless cycles of dating, or I was in an on again, off again relationship for 5 years, pretty much. Like, it wasn't consistent 5 years, but still too long when I look in retrospect, because this person could never give me what I needed and I couldn't walk away from it because I thought it was the person. So over COVID, I remember giving it like that kind of last, we're either doing this or we're not chance. Yeah. And I very quickly saw that not enough had changed. And ultimately, this wasn't a relationship that was meeting my needs. And we see this so often in our community with our listeners that we're always trying to hold on to these relationships, whether it's for fear of nothing better coming along or fear of, you know, that you're not worthy. I probably had both of those happening, or that you just haven't seen a good definition of love. I think that's a lot of people too, is that either growing up, we didn't see those role models, or we're just like in this endless cycle of modern dating where it's kind of the norm that you're going to get ghosted. It's kind of expected. So it's really sad actually when we think about it, that's become so normalized. Yeah. So I think, you know, like it took me a long time to realize that I actually like wanted more and needed more and could ask for more and meet. It's a lot easier to meet someone that's willing to meet you than try to change someone that's not. That was a lesson. It took me a little too long to learn that you can't change people.
That's a hard lesson though.
That's a hard lesson. Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking of the similarity in what the two of you talked about, which is about this piece of the bravery to say no to a relationship. Like,
absolutely.
It takes such bravery. It's so scary. It's like I was dating someone years ago who was just not the nicest person in a lot of ways. And my dad said to me, he said, "Ken, it's going to feel like amputating your own arm. But you're going to have to do it."
Yeah, it's hard in the moment.
So helpful to me.
When you don't,
and he's a Holocaust survivor, you know, so like he knows pain.
Yeah,
you know, so he's kind of got that like gravitas. So that helped me. That helped me a lot.
Yeah, it's hard when you're in it, when you're really in it, and it's very difficult too. I think UA, you could probably relate to this. We get so many mixed messages, like dating's supposed to be easy or relationships are hard. You know, you don't know, like sometimes, like what is the level of hardness that you have to work through versus that point where it's just not working. And it's a hard balance to find.
That's such a big one. That is such a big one. I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on that. And, you know, even thinking about the fact that you have spoken to thousands of people probably asking those same questions. I'd just love to hear any of your thoughts about how do you suss that out? Like, when are you supposed to not quit before the miracle? When do you like give all? You know, Marianne Williamson has this great line. She says, "Both feet in until both feet out." How do you know when to put both feet out? How do you know when to keep trying? I'd love to hear any of your thoughts from all that you've seen and all the people that you've worked with. Any reflections on that for people that are wondering, should I try harder or should I be leaving?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a question that gets asked every second of every day, because we focus a lot on starting relationships, but we don't talk about leaving or exiting out of relationships. And many of us depend on external factors to happen. The other person has to move. There was infidelity. There was some sort of disagreement. The other person gave up. But when you are put in the driver's seat of stepping out of a relationship, it's a lot harder to make that decision, because that would be based on your needs not being met. You're not being valued in this relationship. Do you actually see that? I think in my experience, as I look back upon this 5-year relationship, I always felt like as long as I say I gave it my best, I tried my best, and there's nothing more I can do, And if it's still not the relationship I want, that is a point to leave. My ex-partner, on the other hand, relied on external events, something to push the relationship apart. I'm grateful that it did happen that way because it made a very clean sever of the relationship. But I think if this didn't happen, I would have eventually had to take the steps to exit out because I felt like I really did try my best.
Yeah.
End of the day.
Yeah. 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 So those two pieces, the piece of like knowing that you tried your best, like both feet in. And then the other piece of kind of how you are feeling, how you are being seen, how you are being held overall in a kind of like general way. Is that meeting your needs or is it not?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a big difference too of merging two people as humans that have different beliefs, different ways of doing life and coming together versus you don't feel respected or the, you know, relationship isn't consistent or it doesn't bring out the best side of you. We have our seven things that matter. That's kind of this like gut check of, okay, can you go through and just be like, how is this relationship making me feel overall?
The seven things that matter.
Yeah. So we could go through them, but it's consistency first and foremost.
Consistency. Yep.
If that's not there, then ultimately nothing else matters. Like if someone isn't reliable, they're not showing up, you know, there's what else is there at that point? Like that's the core of a relationship. Yet for so many of us, myself included, we settle for people that are not consistent. We settle for people that, you know, we won't settle for someone that's under 6 feet, but we'll settle for someone that gives you like the bare breadcrumbs. And when you think about it, it really makes no sense at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, this just reminds me, I had a conversation with a friend of mine. He was trying to exit out of a marriage where there were kids involved, or he was still kind of pondering whether he should do it or not. But he said he was listening to this audio tape at the time. And this woman said, I'm going to give you 7 questions. And these 7 questions, if you can even make it through all of them, you're going to get clarity. But most likely, you're going to get clarity by the 3rd question. Yeah. So here are the questions. I found them extremely interesting. The first one was there ever violence involved? Was your life ever in danger? Easy one, right? If your answer is yes, get the fuck out.
Yeah, or just to say something about that your life might not have been in danger, but if there was physical violence, still get the fuck out.
Still yes. Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
The second question was the relationship ever epic? Was there ever a moment you thought, this is the relationship, the love of a lifetime? Was it ever epic? So he got to that question. He said, yeah, like in our 2nd or 3rd year, we truly made an epic marriage. The 3rd question was, if you exited the relationship and it can be guaranteed that nobody gets hurt and everyone comes out unscathed in the entire, your community of people who may be affected, would you exit? Mm-hmm. And that made him cry and say yes, because he was very much scared of his kids being affected, his family being affected, her being affected. And he said, if that can be guaranteed that everyone comes out fine, mm-hmm. I need to leave.
That's a really good point.
He only got to the 3rd question. He's like, done.
Wow. But I want to hear the rest. They're awesome questions.
I know. Well, I didn't. He only got to the 3rd. So,
oh, damn.
The rest of the questions.
I mean, that's the thing, too. It's like at different stages, there's probably different questions you're going to ask, too. Right. Like, it's very different.
Really true.
Yeah. Like when you're first mm-hmm. meeting someone versus, you know, when you have to determine if you exit this, will it affect other people? It's very different. But I think it's a good reminder that we're consciously making these decisions. It's not like we're putting our partners under a microscope, but it is important to constantly and consistently be checking in with yourself.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So another question. And then I just want to let the two of you just say kind of what you want to say. I feel like because you're just such, you're really treasure chests of experience and insight. So I just want to hear like anything that you want to say to the listeners. But I do have this one question. I would love to have you both talk about like the ways that we push love away, like that piece of work, maybe without even realizing it or realizing it, but we can't help it. Like that dimension of the dating journey, the ways that like almost against our will or behind the scenes, we're sabotaging. I just love to hear any of your thoughts or stories or, you know, reflections or advice, because that just seems so significant.
It is very significant. And we often talk about how we think we're headed into a love crisis because much of the younger generation and our generations are giving up on love.
You think so?
Yes. They're burnt out by dating. They see the outcome of their parents' generation. We're also just dating in such a way without a North Star these days that there's just so many configurations of a relationship and dating, and people are definitely exploring them all, but they're not understanding that this is part of the process. They're only seeing the failed attempts, right? The kind of like the course correcting that happens in between, which can really be exhausting. So we feel like what is pushing people away from investing in dating is one, they're very outcome focused. You really only focus on finding that person who gives you butterflies and chemistry and wanting to never leave them, you know, and you can't live your life without them. That's not doing life with someone. That's not realistic. That is how rom-coms play out, and they're not real. So that's one piece, is that we're focusing so much on the outcome. The other part of it is that there's so much of this you versus me mentality in dating too. People get on the defensive when they go on a date. They feel like, well, I stopped spending my time with you. What are you going to bring to the table? But relationships, and Julie loves this word, it's a collaboration. It's truly two people coming together to work on a project together. Yet in dating, it's so much of a me versus you, men versus women, men versus men, women versus women. There's always an enemy on the other side that you're trying to collaborate with eventually. It's a very contradictory way of doing life with someone.
Yeah.
Wow. Those are really deep things. There's so much to that. And that's such a kind of snapshot of what dating is like now for younger people in this kind of very sad state in a way. Thank you. That was really fascinating. You were going to say something, Julie, too?
Yeah, we have a term that we call relationship chicken, which, you know, feeds into what UA was talking about. It's basically we do the exact opposite of, you know, what we would need in a relationship while we're dating. And we're so afraid to show our cards that we basically end up making no moves at all. We don't want to be the ones to define the relationship because we don't want to show, you know, we don't want to show that we're like invested. But at the end of the day, if you're in a relationship, you need to show you're invested or it's not going to last. So it's so funny that the behaviors at early stage dating are so opposite. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier of, you know, at the very beginning of like, what's the line of working on a relationship versus throwing in the towel? And then also what you were asking about sabotage. We feel like things should just go well once we meet that person. Everything should be perfect. So the second there is any conflict, we bounce. And the reality is there's going to be conflict in every single relationship. It's two different people coming together. Again, bringing it back to, is, you know, this is a bad relationship because you don't feel respected versus it's just merging of two people. If it's merging of two people, the biggest mistake is getting out at the sign of any conflict, because guarantee you'll find it with someone else after that mini honeymoon period wears off.
For sure.
Yeah.
Or different conflict with someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yes. What about like kind of the state of affairs for, maybe I'm going to kind of break it down. We talked about younger people. Now let's talk about people maybe in their 30s, 40s, early 40s, like that crew. And then I'm going to ask you about like people beyond 40, let's say 30s and 40s. Like, what do you see there? Like any insights about that? I mean, it's a broad group of people of all different orientations and gender identities and, you know, life circumstances. But still, I'm really curious about like any kind of global things that you've seen.
And that's our group. Julie and I are in that age group. And we always say that we straddle two worlds. We straddle the traditional old world of doing things and the new world. And there's just so much learning along the way. Part of us are in our generation are still, we're still embedded in the traditional gender roles or how dating should work and dating for love, dating for marriage. And the other side of us is we want to embrace this new world of non-traditional relationships. How do I look at dating without thinking about marriage? How do I have multiple partners and have it be completely morally sound? So there's a lot of confusion in this generation alone, just with the straddling of the both worlds. And I think ultimately, this is the generation that's going to connect both worlds. We just haven't figured that out quite yet. And but the kind of the masterpiece that's coming out of this is that our generation is learning how to DIY our relationships. We are getting into relationships and saying, let's figure out a way for us to do just us that works for us. And maybe it has a little bit of the old world and it has a little bit of the new world, but these are ultimately going to be new traditions in a new way of doing relationships.
That was amazing. Wow, that was so cool. That's really exciting. That's really an exciting thought that then becomes the question is like taking the old, taking the new, taking what isn't discovered and saying, what do we need for us? What is true for us?
Yeah.
Wow, so interesting, so cool. Yeah.
It kind of going to like what you were saying of what is getting in our ways. It's crazy that even in 2023, we still hear women in their, you know, 30s and 40s being like, I don't want to send a text like I had a good time.
Yes.
Or
yes.
I don't want to reach out first. And I know for me, that was pivotal to just put that stuff away and just be like, if I see someone that's interesting, I'm going to reach out on a dating app. If I want to tell someone I had a good time and I want to see them again, I'm going to do it. Because ultimately, I want someone that I can just text freely or talk to freely. So if I'm holding back at these early stages, like what relationship is that setting you up for? So I think we're seeing a lot of people have these light bulb moments and really unlearning the rules, unlearning the bad dating advice and those terrible books that we were fed for years. Not deeper dating. Deeper dating was always on the ball ahead of this curve. I mean, like Why Men Love Bitches and the rules, like those books were really detrimental. And I know as someone that, you know, maybe was a little bit of a later bloomer, I was like, oh, I just need to read these books and then I'll be good. And they actually really screwed me completely.
Yeah. Yeah. That brings up such an important point, you know, like this kills me. Like I see men all the time. They've just heard all of this shit about what an alpha man is.
Oh,
and
so bad.
Like how you have to, you know, but men are tortured by this and women are tortured by this message of like femininity. And if you want an alpha man, you have to embrace your feminine. And, you know, these things just.
It's so
they break my fucking heart and they piss me off. And as a queer person, you know, I just am so grateful to the queer community to like, you know, for kind of leading us out of this gender binary into so much of a richer spectrum. But it's complicated, right? Because we still have the old patterning. Like we know we want this freedom or liberation. Maybe we don't know that, but assuming we do, but we're still stuck in the old places too. And that makes it hard in a relationship. I'd love to hear your thoughts about people who are stuck in that. They want more freedom from gender role rigidity. But also, like, it's inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts about that or experiences or stories or?
So many.
You know what's so triggering? It's so triggering when people say, be in your feminine energy or be in your masculine energy. We often hear this from successful independent women who will take charge of every other aspect of their life except for their love lives. They're sitting ducks, waiting to be picked, waiting to be texted, waiting to be called, waiting to be matched. Yet there's all this advice telling them, be in your feminine. You want to be the one dropping your handkerchief and waiting for the man to pick it up for you. Yeah, every other aspect, go get it. You know, go be a CEO. Your favorite position is CEO. Go get your household. Go have a kid on your own if you want to. You can do everything else in your life. But when it comes to dating, you got to fucking wait. Fucking wait.
Yes, and don't be too powerful. Nuts.
Then you're not your authentic self. You're just like this dated chameleon showing up that blends in with the masses.
It's so crazy making, right? Like, be totally authentic, but be in your feminine self.
Right. Yeah. Don't let on too much. Like,
don't talk about your work. Don't talk about how successful you are.
Right.
Talk about your lingerie. Talk about the pink dresses you own. Like, what?
It's just agony. It doesn't even fit anymore, but it's so hard to get out of. And then for the guys, it's an equal tyranny. It's the tyranny of, if you're not the provider, if you're not the leader, I mean, forget the incel stuff. That's like scary and creepy and horrifying. So creepy. Let's just talk about how men are stuck in this thing of how they, and then the horrible thing of like, you have to be in touch with your feelings because that's what women want.
Be vulnerable.
But you have to be the guy. You have to be the guy. You have to be the masculine energy. And, in the queer community, this is also true, but so much less true. And, John Gottman said that the queer community is about 50 years ahead of the straight community.
Oh, I see that.
In that regard, because of, so much more freedom there. Not that it's not still true in the queer community, but I'm deeply grateful to the queer community for kind of leading the way to some degree. And as somebody who's 66 years old, me and my husband are kind of like stuck in old gender roles, but working on it. Our youngest child is transgender and gorgeous and free and dates right and left with people that are just, it's just different for younger people in that way. And it's so beautiful to see. So the old, the new, and kind of being in the middle. I mean, in a way that's kind of exciting, right? To think about where we could be going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just gets in the way of so much. And you were asking earlier of like what hacks there are, right?
Oh, yes. Let's talk about hacks.
I mean, I don't know if I'm going to give you the answer you want, but I feel like people are looking for the hack. The hack doesn't exist. I think that's, we've heard so many, I think the pickup community too has really messed with men. Like I was talking to this one guy that was just convinced that the reason that he scared off this girl is because he talked about crypto. And I'm like, everyone's just so like not looking at the big picture. I think that's what is one of the biggest issues and challenges in dating right now. We're so focused on making our profile perfect and having the best opening line, but ultimately that stuff doesn't matter. Like we just need a gateway in to like meet someone. It doesn't need to be this like perfectly crafted, work of art. And the one thing you don't need in a relationship is a dating profile. But we see people just get so hung up on this process. And a lot of it, I think, stems back to who people think we should be. And you're almost putting on that face in all these early stage dating, thinking there's a hack or the perfect opening line.
That's true. That's true. Totally true. I am sure that in your bag of tricks, you have a million kind of like wisdom hacks as opposed to cheap hacks. So I'm just putting that out. If anything pops up in your head, I would love to hear that. I'm certain of that. Yeah. But I want to go, I want to continue that linear framing of age groups and just say something now and ask you about older folks like 50 plus in all communities, any thoughts or, any thoughts about that?
This is,
I guess I do want to say one thing in particular, I want to hear your thoughts first. Then I'll ask my questions. Yeah.
We actually have a big subset of people in this age group in our Facebook community, probably more than other areas. Some of it could just be demographics of Facebook also. What's interesting to me is that a lot of the challenges that people have in this age group are actually very similar to people in their 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. You would think that it wouldn't be the same because, you know, you're that much older, but a lot of people are dating for the first time, or it's their first time using apps and online dating mechanisms. So while they have a lot of relationship experience, a lot of people are divorced, coming back into the dating scene, they don't have as much dating experience. And we see it actually seamlessly integrate with the rest of the age groups. I think more surprising than I thought.
For sure. And if you think about it, back in the day, average lifespan was 50. You die at 50. So yeah, you get married, have kids. And then before you can even reflect on what you just did, you die. But now, as our average lifespan inches closer and closer to 100, we're entering uncharted territories, especially for the 50 plus group, where they feel like they're living a second life right now. So many people are on a different marriage path. They're exploring all these non-traditional relationships. We have a wonderful guest on our show, Mei Lee, and she is engaged for the first time at age 57. And she feels like it is the first time. You know, this is the first time she is experiencing something, but it's later in life. And when you think about it, the last 50 years, nobody really talks about. People just think you eventually get, you know, retired, and then you just live a good life, or and then it's somehow you just do that. But if you had to continue that for 50 more years, there's a lot of reinventing of yourself that has to happen. You have to reflect on the first half of your life and then reinvent accordingly. So what we're finding in this age group is that there's a lot of exploration. A lot of people just, like what Julie was saying, feeling like they're dating for the first time, because some of them truly are figuring out what STIs are, how to have safe sex, all of it. They're basically teenagers, just as an older age group.
Experience, yeah.
Right. Maybe teenagers with a bunch of baggage, too.
Yeah.
And so could you say something about the difference for heterosexual men and women, the difference of experience for single guys who are in their 60s and 70s, let's say, versus women who are in their 60s and 50s, 60s and 70s? Anything about the differences you've noticed?
This is, you know, I mean, of course, this is just our subset of people that we've noticed. So take that for what it is.
Right.
But we've actually seen a lot of women in this age bucket that don't want to get married again.
Yeah. Yeah.
That they want more casual relationship. Maybe they want to fall in love again, but they don't necessarily want to get married and have that whole traditional world. Yeah. And I think everyone's different when they come out of divorce. There's some people that never want to get married again. There's people that want to dive back in, but there has been like a bigger noticeable shift towards the hetero women than we've seen with hetero men. Again, though, just a subset, everyone is different.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
My parents are very close friends with this retirement community, community near their home. And they told me that the trend is really, well, first of all, men die earlier than women. So you have a lot more single women in their 60s and 70s in these retirement communities.
You do, yeah.
And many of them do not want to get married again or have a serious relationship, but they love dating because they've never done that before. And the men in these retirement communities are desperate to be in relationships. They're desperate for companionship. So as soon as they enter these communities, they want to be coupled up right away. They're looking for their safety net. They're very much looking for a second, third, fourth, whatever marriage they're on. They want to get married. So there's a conflict within the community where the women are more like, let's just date around, let's hang out, we can be companions. And the men are like, come on, let's put a ring on it, let's settle down.
This is wild to hear. This is really interesting because my experience is kind of the polar opposite.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because what I've seen is guys in that age group only will date women 20 years younger.
Oh, gosh.
Because they can. They're like a kid in a candy store. They're most like These are terrible generalizations, but it just is something I've heard and seen a lot. You know, 20 years or younger, because they can. The women, you know, can't in the same way. They just don't feel like the market bears that in the same way. Guys are like kind of kids in a candy store because they can, because they have so many options and they're so in demand because there are so few single men who were like, you know, eligible bachelors. So I have seen women like just mourn the fact of the immaturity of men in their age bracket. So hearing what you're saying gives me a little bit of relief, but it's interesting, these different perspectives that we've seen.
I was going to say, I've actually seen women dating younger a lot of times.
Yes.
Like, I don't actually don't see that. I think what you're saying is definitely like the stereotypical what you've heard all these years, but that definitely isn't what we're seeing anymore. So, of course, we're, you know, all of our sample sizes are just a subset. There's going to be people that fall into all these buckets, but we've actually been seen and feel like it's almost empowering that women are dating younger and they're not feeling held back by this as much.
I love this. This is so interesting. Maybe this is a trend that I haven't noticed yet, but that you're starting to see happen.
Or it's just you make what you want. I think that's ultimately at the end of the day, like
I think that
there's a lot of stuff that's fed to us. Like once you get to a certain age, you can't do this. And you know, that's just not today's world. Like people aren't just getting married by 30 and then you're done if you didn't do that. Like people are dating at all ages, coming in and out of the dating market. There's no rules anymore. And I think you ultimately need to just find what works for you and recognize like when something's a limiting belief, it's getting in your way versus actually reality.
This is a theme, I think, of this entire conversation. What you just said and what the two of you, it's the DIY kind of concept that, you know, that we are crafting this based on our relationship, based on who we are, that it's more like an open palette, that there are possibilities that we're creating. I just want to acknowledge the vision that you're kind of offering to people here. And then the questions that go with that. Like the questions of what do you really want? Mm-hmm. What do you envision for yourself? What do you picture dating should be like? What should sex be like? What should your gender expression be like? You're kind of this is like what I hear you both saying is an invitation to a greater originality and freedom in constructing what you want dating to look like. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. You design your love life, ultimately.
You do, because you can't predict what the future holds and you can't predict what the tomorrow you will feel like. But in dating, if we are looking for a monogamous partner, we're in an exciting time where we can DIY our relationships and we just want to find someone who wants to DIY with us. We don't have to have all the answers up front. This is a collaborative effort between you and this person who wants to evolve this relationship. We had a guest on our show. He's a high school friend of mine. His name's Chris. He'd been married for 10 years to his wife, hetero relationship. They had two daughters. And he said, I really feel like I'm not being my authentic self. I feel like I am a woman and I feel like I like men. And instead of ending the relationship, which, you know, we can't predict how their future will look like, but his wife said, let's see if we can evolve our relationship. So Chris became Cynthia, and now they renew their vows, Cynthia and her wife, and their daughters call them their two moms. And that's how they're doing their relationship right now. And it's working for them right now. So that is, after 10 years of marriage, you could have a completely different relationship for the next 10 years. You just have to have the right partner who wants to explore that with you. And if they're not willing to, that's okay. That is the end of that relationship. You still received a beautiful gift out of it. And now you can find someone else for this next phase.
And it doesn't even have to be as extreme too. It could even like, I mean, it definitely can be, but it doesn't have to be. It could just be like, this is how we communicate. This is how we work together. Like coming up with whatever rules of engagement work for the two of you it can be as simple as that as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. You know, I find after 14 years with Greg, I am now just finally noticing patterns in his behavior and my behavior that I never knew. Like, I just feel like there are different wavelengths. There are like quick wavelengths where you see things quickly. And then there's some wavelengths that you don't notice for 10 or 15 years. It's slow, slow awareness. And then that changes things. And, you know, we're seeing these different parts. Our love remains really consistent, but there is a crafting that has to happen around these new insights. So I think of the two of you very much at the forefront of this DIY, of this recrafting, of thinking creatively in this way and seeing what's coming, what's been, what's getting woven together out of all of those strands. And I love your being questioners at the same time. And I just think this is really exciting. And I'm excited to think about bringing you back to help our listeners think about how they can DIY their dating journey, their relationship life, their presentation of self, their expression of self, what they envision, because we are kind of creating a new world.
Yeah.
And I love the vision and the way that you're thinking of it. I think it's really exciting. I haven't heard it before. I think it's full of hope. And I think it's an antidote to the despair that comes with all the things that don't work anymore in the dating world. So I love what you have to offer and what you're saying. And I would just like to ask you two things. Final thought from each of you, and then how people can get in touch with you. So first, maybe a final thought from each of you. Julie.
Hey, final thought. Yeah. I mean, I think we've said it before. It's like you're ultimately the CEO of your love life. Like you decide what works for you. You decide who a good partner is. You get to fire someone if they're not showing up. And I know that could be intimidating to some people, but putting yourself back into the forefront is really the only way forward. And that doesn't mean that you're selfish. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be there for someone. It just means that you're going to give to the person that's going to give back and that's going to show up the way that you do. So in order to DIY your love life and design something that works for the two of you, you need someone that's going to be in there with you. It can't be this situationship or person that's half in. And until we can start getting rid of those people, it won't allow for the right person to get in.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Three cheers for the wise no.
Yes.
Thank you. And Yue.
Final thought from me would be dating is a balance between surfing and diving. So surfing above water, you're going with the waves, seeing where things go, being malleable. And when you dive, you're being vulnerable and you're getting to the core of who someone is and getting to the core of who you are. So many of us have mastered the surfing in dating, but the diving is probably the most difficult entry point for so many. And we think it's about getting vulnerable and trauma dumping and talking about our past and our secrets. Ultimately, the diving part, and if we're really looking for a hack, is asking the question, what are you currently working through? You can ask that question to someone you're on date with. You can ask that question to yourself. And that helps you dive underneath the waters of someone's surface level offerings and knowing that everyone's working through some shit. And now you get a glimpse into what they're working through and they get a glimpse into what you're working through. And that's kind of the ultimate dive, first dive you can do in dating.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. Thank you both. It's just, you're very special to me, the two of you. And I'm just so glad to share you with my audience. And I'm excited for this whole concept of DIYing your relationship and your vision of relationship. That's just really exciting. So how can people get in touch with you? How can they learn about your podcast? How can they learn about your projects, your offerings?
Yeah, I mean, we are on every podcast player and platform out there. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Dateable Podcasts, at Dateable Podcast is our Instagram handle, pretty much across the socials. And you can always go to datablepodcast.com.
Perfect. Yes. Perfect. Well, you both are awesome. Thank you so much. This was a delight as always.
Thank you so much, Ken. Always an honor.
Thank you. And see you all on the next episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.